Hey everyone, this is Mel and I'm your host of the She Dares podcast. She Dares was created back in 2019 for women to help each other break out of our daily norms, get inspired, learn from each other and experience new things every day. Every week we get a new guest on the show to talk about their experiences when they push themselves to be brave and take a decision. Sometimes things didn't go quite as planned, but everything turned out great in the end, and most of them say that they would never have changed a thing. For me, my biggest decision and biggest dare to myself was starting this podcast. And every single week I ask every guest to give me a new dare. That's me stepping out of my comfort zone every 2 weeks and airing my vulnerabilities to the rest of the world. It's really not easy, but amazing things don't happen by staying safe. That's why humans seek out adventures. We want to feel a bit of risk, but definitely not too much. This is really what She Dares is all about. It's taking that one step to do something different, to experience new things in life. So come and join me on this ride, listen in, take part, and see how you can benefit from being on the other side of your comfort zone. Today, we're talking to a friend of mine, Ruth Feltham. She's based in the UK, and she's now a regional manager for woodlands.co.uk for the southeast of England. We talk about how she went from being an account director in a fast-paced London agency, realizing that the career wasn't aligned to her core values, to then changing paths, buying and selling Woodlands, and the importance of living in the now. Okay, Ruth's ready to roll, so let's get her on the show. How are you, Ruth? You good? It's good to see you.
Yes, I'm all good, thank you, Mel. Yeah, all fine and dandy.
It's been a long time since I saw you in the flesh, I think, and for many people, but I can't wait until I can come back to London and actually socialise again.
Yeah, absolutely. No, likewise, it's been way too long.
So just for the listeners, it would be really, really cool just if you could briefly introduce yourself.
So I'm Ruth. I'm a mother of two teenage boys. I'm the wife of Jim. I'm a sister, a daughter, an aunt. I'm a runner and a paddleboarder, and I'm the owner of a small woodland.
Cool. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, because when I met you 18 years ago or something in a digital agency in London where I was working as a web developer, and I think you were an account director there.
Yes, I was definitely in client services, exactly what my job description was. I can't recall, but yes, I was quite possibly an account director or similar in Adland.
Yeah, in the big old London agencies back then, it was quite different from how I'm living right now. But it sounds like it's a bit different from where you are today. So I've got a question for you, and that is, was there a time where you kind of stepped out of your comfort zone?
Absolutely. So about 5 years ago, I threw out everything that fundamentally I had in place in terms of my job and my career, my future in that industry, and decided to have a complete career swap and started working in forestry. So gone from 15 years of working in digital, e-commerce, advertising and marketing, and yeah, swapped it out, basically swapped the office for the outdoors. So a huge fundamental shift.
Yeah. Was that a conscious decision? How did that kind of come about?
Well, there is possibly quite a story behind, of course, the journey that I'd been on as to how and why I ended up with such a radical change in my life. I fell into advertising and marketing, possibly slightly by nepotism, and ended up living in London 15 years ago and got a job through an old university friend working for an e-commerce startup, and absolutely loved it. It was a great environment. It was great fun. It was definitely a work hard, play hard. It was around the time I met my husband, was living in flat share with various friends. So it was a great time. And from there went on to work in advertising and marketing agencies, which obviously where we actually met each other. And the years kind of zoom past, got married, had a couple of kids, carried on working in the same industry. But I think the questions began to surface of as to, am I actually really happy doing what I'm doing? It's you blink and you suddenly realise another year has passed, and started, I guess, a bit of soul searching, as we all do, and fundamentally questioning my happiness and wondering, well, how much am I really enjoying what I'm doing? And knowing deep in my heart, I didn't want to be doing what I was doing by the time I turned 50. And a bit like being in a bad relationship, I guess, knowing, well, if this isn't what I want to be doing or a situation I want to be in the future, then what am I hanging around for now? And why am I doing it? What am I actually going to get out of it? So I think that's what probably kick-started this soul searching. That and the fact at that time, which is probably about 10 years ago, I went client side. So I was working for a client in a global role. And again, it was definitely a work hard, play hard environment, a fantastic time. But I've never worked so hard in my life. It was excruciating. You know, I was surrounded by a fantastic small team of lovely people, very bright, really hardworking, but you know, people were dropping like flies from burnout, and you kind of sit there and you think, well, this is a bit odd. And I remember sort of saying, I was on a temporary contract, and they'd offered me to go permanent, and I just laughed and thought, why would I want to go permanent and commit myself into this environment? And you know, moved on from there basically. But at that stage, starting to sort of question, I guess it was more about work-life balance, which is, you know, a real cliche for the world that we live in now. I think a lot of people talk about the work-life balance, quite rightly so, and realising that my work-life balance was appalling, absolutely appalling, and decided at that time that the best way of tackling this was to actually talk to a life coach. It's something that someone had recommended and said, why don't you talk about a life coach? They'll really help sort of get under the bonnet and interrogate what's important to you and help support you in making changes that you otherwise wouldn't have the confidence to do on your own. So that's something I did about 10 years ago, which was a very useful exercise. But I think it was one of those situations, possibly in about the second session, we'd totally identified what the issues were. And that's my core values, what I really value in life, were not being in any way satisfied through my work situation. So I think at that stage, I realised, well, actually, you know, I need to change this out and swap it up and do something completely different.
It's amazing that, because I think that's also the reason why I started She Dares as well, was because there was a realization after a burnout where I wasn't living with my core values at all. Like, I mean, I'm still doing what I'm doing today for money, but there are so many people that we talk to these days that I think are just in that daily grind, just continuing on because they don't really know anything else. Because, you know, from your journey, right at the start, moving to London, you just, you know, you got this job and then it was just like, oh, kind of 15 years just going, having fun, working hard, but gaining that experience. And then, as you said, you know, you blink and then you're like, oh, what just happened? And you don't ever plan that, you know, it just happened.
Absolutely. And I think you don't question it because perhaps you're progressing in your career, you're getting promotions, you're getting recognition, you're having lots of fun, you know, and surrounded by really talented, creative people, you know, most of the time you don't really question it. But this exercise in core values, I think she gave me a list of about 400 words and asked me to whittle it down to 4 or 5. And it was a very simple exercise to do, which boiled it down essentially to family, happiness and satisfaction. I think those were the three things that I really called out. And family was a problem in that I just didn't have the time to spend with my family because of work. I was having to travel a lot at that particular time. And would be away and miss things. And then during the week, at this particular time, you know, I'd be going home at midnight from work and setting the alarm again at six and being out the door practically before the kids were even awake. So I wasn't a mother Monday to Friday because I wasn't seeing my children. So, yeah, there was a big gap there, which obviously needed to be addressed. The happiness, now that was a really interesting kind of question of, well, why aren't I happy? You know, I'm doing all right, you know, everyone's fit and healthy and all of that. And I started to explore, I suppose, this idea of coping versus enjoying and thinking I'm a coper. I come from a family of copers, of strong people who just, you know, grit their teeth and get on with it and don't really make a fuss and complain, which is admirable on one sense. But on the other side of the coin, started to think, well, there's such a wide gap, isn't there, between coping and enjoying. And I can cope with my job perfectly well, but am I enjoying it? Am I actually walking away each day and thinking, oh, I really enjoyed today at work? Or are you just getting through it, sort of ticking the boxes, making the meetings, doing the presentations, answering all the emails, you know, which is the situation I very much found myself in. And then the third one, the satisfaction. I think working in an industry which is very task and delivery oriented, it's very easy to end up getting your job satisfaction from those moments in time of actually finishing a piece of work or getting a sign off from clients or delivering a project or finishing a meeting. And it's a really odd mentality to end up in of then not actually being able to enjoy the process, I suppose, or the actual being in the now. So your satisfaction, your enjoyment of work is very much based upon completing things, in my opinion. I mean, this is how I felt.
I think also it's so fast paced as well. You don't really get the time to kind of celebrate either, like when something has happened, right? It's like, right, you've got five projects on the go. The five projects are done. It's like, right, here's 15 more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there of as soon as one thing is dealt with, the next thing is already there. And, you know, the tidal wave of emails, I think, used to hit me the most of the night. You know, we used to joke, me and my husband, about the night shift of getting home, getting the kids into bed. And then this is, again, a few years ago when they were younger. And then I'd go back onto my laptop and then deal with emails, knowing that if I hadn't gone through my emails before the start of the next day, then I'd already be starting the day on the back foot. I mean, this was intensified when I had the role in a global organisation, because, of course, people were answering and sending emails 24/7. And it was quite amusing because it almost became a sense of competition of who would be staying up the latest or who would be sending the first email of the day. And it was an email culture that was just ridiculous. I remember one instance of being in the office and someone sent me an email calling me out on something, copying in people from literally the other side of the world to make a point, at which point I stood up and said across the office, "Have you just emailed me about something?" And she said, "Yeah, why?" I was like, "Well, I am over here." I just thought, what is this culture we live in of people just pushing problems, you know, to each other and not just talking to each other and dealing with things. Anyway, I go slightly off point there.
No. It's fine. I think it's very poignant to bring up. I think a lot of people could understand that.
Yeah. So something happened around this time, Mel, which I don't think you know about. It's really random. But it's all part of the journey, I suppose. So having sought the services of this life coach and realizing that I needed to make a change, I actually embarked on my first career swap, which was actually in soft furnishings. Right.
Okay. I didn't know.
Okay.
That.
So I decided, right, I need to get out of here. And literally it got to the point, and I'm sure a lot of people have been there. It got to the point when I was job hunting in the evening. I was thinking I'll become a driving instructor, or I'll become, you know, I don't know, a deliverer of organic veg or something. I was literally thinking, I'll just do anything. I just need to get out of this environment. But of course, at the same time, the reality of being in my early 40s at that time, you've got a mortgage, you've got kids, you've got a situation that when you've got a nice salary coming in each month, it's all too easy to stay in that comfortable situation with the familiarity.
Totally. Before you go into the soft furnishings thing, so when you said, you know, you'd made the decision to leave, to get out of that environment, what were kind of like your biggest fears during that time? Because you said, I'd literally do anything. So your goal was literally just to get out of advertising.
Yes.
Because you mentioned the values, that's why.
Yeah. I think the fear was possibly less about leaving and more about staying. I think the fear was possibly staying, which was obviously the driving force of thinking, if I stay, I will lose my mind. And my mental health, my physical health, my sense of me is going to be destroyed. I mean, that sounds really dramatic. But as I say, seeing people who do suffer burnout, you know, you do lose the sense of self and you're thinking, well, hang on a minute. And again, another conversation I now recall with a life coach is, you're still the same person that you were when you were 18. And when I was 18, I packed a bag and went to live in Australia for a year. And that didn't feel scary. It was just something I wanted to do. And I think that reminding you that you're still that same person and that you can just do these things, and really identifying, well, what's stopping you from doing it? You know, what is that fear? And acknowledging, oh, I'm not really fearful so much of doing something completely different, because it will either work or it won't work, and then you change the situation. I think it was more the fear of staying, which probably drove me. My sister gave me some advice, although we do argue about exactly what this advice was, but in my interpretation of it, and this was going back to when I was a lot younger, was making these big, important life decisions. There's no right or wrong. It's literally a decision that will influence or have an impact on the rest of your life. So hilariously, it does sound quite scary of, oh my gosh, you are making a decision that will change the rest of your life. But it's not necessarily a right or wrong one. It's just a path, isn't it? It's just the next step in your life journey. And, you know, that will take you on in a certain direction. But at any stage, at any point, you know, that can be changed.
Yeah, you can deviate from anywhere. You just got to think of it like, bit like a tree, you know, you start off on the trunk and then you branch out and then you can branch out again. You know, it's actually, it doesn't matter, you just grow and bloom. And most of the people, you know, that we've spoken to over the series, their journeys were never really planned out in where they thought they would be. They never ended up, but for the better, actually.
Sure.
You know?
Yes.
So things happened where, you know, it was just totally random, or there was an opportunity that came up and now they're so much more fulfilled, or, you know, they never imagined themselves that they could have been here. So, yeah, I love that. So then getting into like soft furnishings and...
it's so random.
How did that come about?
Well, it was a bit of a curveball, I must admit. And it was partly because I had got this idea in my head during the life coaching that what was fundamentally missing was creativity in my world and the desire to actually make something physical. Living in an industry, working in an industry rather, where you're doing PowerPoints and presentations and everything's digital. Yeah, you're creating something, but it's nothing that you make. So I really got this total bee in my bonnet that if I'm making something, I will be happy, I'll be satisfied. So did this quite intense course in soft furnishings as a kind of evening course whilst I was working, thinking, oh, I'll become a soft furnisher, then all the answers to my woes will be given. And so, cut a long story short, ended up sort of quitting the industry, not with a huge fanfare, But with a kind of, yeah, I'm out of here, I'm going to go and do soft furnishings. And I did. And I did it for, I think it was probably about 9 months, best part of a year anyway. And you know what? It was fine in that I was my own boss. I was doing something completely different. It was ridiculously easy to sort of find work. Everyone's got someone who knows someone who's like, oh, they need a blind, and you know, they need some curtains. And so it was all word of mouth business, and I was flat out busy. But I guess what it did allow me to do is realise things that I didn't think were important to me were important to me. The main ones probably being people, having people around me, and this is really vulgar and I'm almost embarrassed to admit it, but money. I mean, I was working just as long hours because I was slow and I was new to it, and you know, everything I was doing was hand-stitched. Well, not entirely, but sorry. I mean, there was a lot of craft, I guess, involved in it. So, and I was slow. So I was ending up working just as long hours for an absolute pittance of money. So after about 9 months of listening to a lot of radio on my own in the kitchen, thinking, oh, I'm a bit lonely and I'm working really hard and my fingers are literally numb from sewing and I'm not actually earning that much money. So, you know, I kind of put my hand back up and said, can someone give me a job back in advertising, please? And went back, not entirely sort of tail between legs, but, you know, I tried something. I enjoyed it, but realised it wasn't a long-term option for me. So I went back into advertising for 2 years, of which I really enjoyed again. I was back in an environment that I was familiar with, comfortable with, working with some fantastic people, some of which I'd known for a long, long time. So it felt good to be back, I suppose. But all these questions were still bubbling under the surface of work-life balance and is this what I want to be doing in another 5 years? No, definitely not. So I still felt like I was treading water. But what I didn't know is, what is my get out going to be? What's my next thing going to be? And not then having the time to really explore that, I suppose, or put a lot of time to it. So what subsequently happened is a phone call from my father-in-law, who had been working as an agent for this company who manage and sell small woodlands. And he said, is it something that you'd be interested in doing? Because I'm thinking of handing over. And there was no question in my mind. I was just like, oh, yep, yes, please, I'll do that. And that was it, really, of being off.
And you know, had you spoken before?
Well, obviously I knew for the best part of 20 years what he did. I didn't really understand what it actually was in sort of day-to-day practical terms, but I knew that his work meant he was outdoors a lot. He was working with foresters, and it always sounded very appealing to me, but that was probably the extent of my knowledge and understanding of what he actually did. But I just thought, well, I'm looking for something different. And I suppose to an extent, having done the soft furnishings for 9 months and going back again, I just thought, well, why not? Why not give something a try? You know, what is the worst that can happen? So again, didn't feel like it was necessarily a huge risk. I mean, it was a massive change. I mean, what the change was essentially taking my work situation and literally throwing that all completely out the window. So I was in a job with a salary, holiday, sick pay, benefits, all the usual stuff. So a lot of security, and I was moving into an industry, firstly, where I knew absolutely nothing, and secondly, into a situation as a self-employed agent with no salary, working on commission only. But I found the whole situation ultimately incredibly liberating, I suppose, of realising that all those structures that were in place before, taking them all away, I just found it incredibly refreshing and liberating.
Have you ever heard of, I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but someone came up with a book called Bullshit Jobs.
Right. No, I haven't. Tell me
so,
about it.
So basically, yeah, the human race just creating these bullshit jobs. So it's you know, like a project manager to manage something that no one actually needs, you know, for a product that no one actually needs, and marketing something for no one. And we've just created this industries of bullshit jobs. We don't need any of them, actually. And all the structures that are within them as well, you know, the whole meeting culture, all the technology around it, it's not needed.
Yeah, I quite like that idea. That's quite interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I certainly know that towards the end of my tenure in advertising, I used to joke and say this is an industry for people who are either young or really passionate about it. And I've realised I am neither, neither of those things. And yeah, this awful sort of sense of cynicism kind of rolled in of people sitting in meetings being really passionate about what they were talking about, really, really excited about something. And I would sit there thinking, I'm not feeling those feelings. And how amusing that we're all sitting there talking about these things. Does anyone outside of this room, does anyone actually care? And, you know, that sort of moment of thinking, no, I don't know if they do really, or certainly they don't care as much as we do. Yeah, it does make you sort of question really the importance of what you do, the relevance of what you do.
100%. So going back to your values and where you are now, I mean, can you go into a bit more detail about what it is you actually do? Because I think I'm on the level of when you first spoke to your father-in-law. You're in the woods, you're in the outside, and you do something with woods.
That's okay. So, no, it's a good question. So I think when I started telling people what I was going to do, there was a lot of extreme confusion of people just saying, I don't understand what it is you're going to do genuinely. I was like, well, on a basic level, I'm an estate agent for Woodlands. So it's a really niche, fairly specialist industry, which started as a family business about 30 years ago and was started up by this family who wanted to buy a woodland and found it really, really difficult. So they managed to get a piece of land, a piece of woodland, and they learnt all about woodland management and got so much value out of it that they realised, well, if we have benefited mentally and physically and enjoyed this ability to own a woodland, possibly it's something that someone else could enjoy. And that's how the business started, right? So they started selling woodlands and realising, if I get into the commercial boring part of it, realising that there's a hell of a lot of woodlands in the country that are derelict and neglected because they're not commercially viable. So they're all sitting around, kind of essentially falling into rack and ruin, whereas you can match people who want to learn about woodland management and own a piece of woodland. And we sell them very much purely for conservation and quiet enjoyment. So these are not sold for people to start glamping businesses or clay pigeon shooting or, I don't know, paintballing or whatever. They're sold for the purpose of being a woodland. And so I guess when I say I'm an estate agent for such a thing, we will prepare a wood for sale and prepare it with a set of particulars and mark its boundaries and deal with any dead, dying, disease, dangerous trees and then make it available for someone to buy. So I'm working with chartered foresters, dealing with management plans and the Forestry Commission and felling licences. I'm working with forestry contractors. So most of my days are spent in walking boots and hard hats, surveying and being out in the woods, which is absolutely brilliant. And all the things that people said, oh, you're going to hate it in the winter. Oh, you're going to get really bored. I'm like, why would I? I'm out in nature. I absolutely love it. And the winter, well, you know, it's cold. We burn a fire. I wear thermals. I take a thermos of tea with me. I actually love it. The only thing I don't like is the rain, is when it's really wet. I must admit, that can get a bit miserable when you're down to your second set of underpants of the day. You think I might as well just go home because but that happens perhaps once a year. You know, it's incredibly rare that it's that wet. So immersing myself in a completely new world, learning from day one, which again was when I go back to the point of liberation and feeling really liberated by swapping out everything I knew. I used to suffer, not extensively, but a little, from imposter syndrome, right? When I was in advertising, of, you know, sitting in a meeting thinking any minute now someone's going to work out that I don't know what I'm talking about, which is a really bizarre mental state to end up in when you've been working in an industry for 15 years. And then moving to something where I genuinely knew very little about, I loved it. I just felt that I could put my hand up and ask endless questions to those around me who had the knowledge and the experience, and soaked it up like a sponge, and just found that brilliant of, well, I'm learning new stuff here, and everyone has to start by learning. And just because I'm 42, I must have been 42, you just realise, well, you could still start something new and learn something new at 42. You don't have to have started it when you were 18 or in your early 20s. And yeah, just not being worried about that, because suddenly I'm working with, you know, blokes with chainsaws who are not judging me in the same way perhaps I would expect to have been judged in a different environment.
And I think as you get older, I think you can learn better in some ways, because I mean, for me, for example, I'm okay with asking questions now, you know, because if I don't, no one's automatically born with skills of whatever, right? You have to learn no matter what you do. So, you know, but I totally recognize when you go into a company or something and someone's throwing out these acronyms at you, you have no idea what it is, but you don't want to be the one person in a room of 20 going, sorry, can you just explain that? Because you don't want to hold up the meeting. You don't want to look silly or whatever the reason. But actually, if you don't know, you should ask. Absolutely you should, because otherwise you're not going to get stuff done. But yeah, I mean, the whole imposter syndrome, it's something that has come up more and more over the last few years. You know, people are talking about it because I think everyone's recognizing that we all feel the same. You know, none of us are 100% experts in anything. So we always feel like we're missing something, or someone else is better at something else. But actually, if we're all just open, kind, sharing with each other, then there's no need to feel that, you know?
That's quite true. And I think if you sit in a room, in a meeting room, right, and there's 15 people there, and you think about what's going on in your own head, and then you realise, well, everyone else is sitting there with their own thoughts going around their own head, and they're not thinking about each, you know, you just realise it's so much of it is in the mind, obviously, in your own mind, you know, and it's not necessarily how anyone else perceives you.
So how has this changed? I mean, obviously we started with the time that you stepped out of your comfort zone. I'm assuming like this is a big one for you. How has that change now impacted your life today and your values?
Gosh, that's a big question. It's a big question because it's a big answer, because it's affected my life in every single way. My day-to-day, my situation, my relationship with my family, being able to spend more time with them, the flexibility that my very unique job affords me because I'm my own boss. I'm in a very, very unique, lucky position. I totally recognise that, in that I have no targets set. I have four meetings a year now. But, you know, I get on, I do my job. And if I don't do my job, I won't make any money because that's how I'm paid. So it's up to me really how I approach it. And so there's a huge shift in the way I live my life on a day-to-day basis. It's certainly a job that provides me with a hell of a lot more satisfaction. Going back to that point earlier about satisfaction. And I think a lot of it, because it's not this delivery-based environment that I work in terms of performing tasks and getting things done. It affords me the ability to live very much in the now. So if I'm spending a day in the woods and I'm out measuring, taking photographs, learning stuff, or I'm with some contractors and they're doing work, it's very much about the there and the now. So that's a big shift as well, in just in terms of way of working. And yeah, I'd say overall, I would say I'm happy, which is great.
It's what everyone's supposedly striving for, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yes, it is what we're striving for. And I've been reading around sort of happiness and the idea of the now recently, because I do find it all quite interesting. And there's a book called The Power of Now. I think it was written years and years ago by a chap called Eckhart Tolle, I think his name is. And it's about finding joy in the now and learning how to be completely present in the moment. And it's a really interesting book. It's kind of book that you have to read and then you reread and then you go back and read bits again, because it just makes you think a lot about happiness. But part of it is talking about the ego and the chattering part of the brain. So all those thoughts that go around in your head that are telling you, oh, you'll be happy if you achieve this, or, you know, if you get this object in your life, or, and the world we live in kind of makes you believe that if you're going to achieve certain things, it will bring you happiness, right? And we also have this chattering part of our brain that's always thinking about the past and always speculating about the future. And on a day-to-day level, telling us we will be happy if we achieve these goals. But these are all really short-term. It's a really relentless search, isn't it, for happiness, if that's how you live your life. And yeah, I'm not denying that there's, you know, moments in your day that you can have happiness, be it eating a big piece of chocolate cake or, you know, watching a programme on telly that you particularly enjoy. Of course, they do bring you joy. But on a bigger scale, I think it's quite interesting to actually think, yeah, but if you're not happy now, then when will you be happy? And there was a really nice analogy I read about the blue sky and how you look out the window, and if it's a really beautiful, clear blue sky, you know, you feel happy, don't you? Whereas if it's cloudy, you never have that slight same sense of happiness. But the blue sky is always there, right? Beyond the clouds, you go up in an aeroplane and you go through those clouds. The blue sky is always there. And it was drawing a comparison to that state of mind, of joy and happiness. It's always there in our minds. And it's all these thoughts, all the chatter in our brain, the worries, the speculation about what's happening tomorrow, worrying about something that's happened in the past. You know, that's all just clutter and chatter that distracts us. So, I mean, I feel like I'm on the tip of an iceberg exploring all of this. And it's, you know, all obviously connected with meditation and that kind of world. But yeah, I'm finding it quite interesting and realizing that the work that I do now is much more in line, I guess, giving me the opportunity to live in the now. And to live in that world.
We should definitely talk more, because I retrained as well as a life coach, and all this neuroscience tells us, you know, like the language that we use every single day is so important. So like the should, the would, we could. Actually, if you flip that, it's very much like your analogy of the blue sky. If you change those words into less should, it should be like, I would like to. Or, you know, I would like to achieve something rather than I must, or something like that. It really changes the waves in your brain, and you feel different about those types of things. And looking at a blue sky that's got clouds in front of it, looking at it through a different lens, you might see the blue sky, you know. It's amazing, actually. It's very powerful language and your mind. And sometimes we talk about, you know, controlling thoughts. It's not necessarily controlling thoughts, but it's capturing a thought and just pushing it aside, just so that you can see something brighter.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like a very sort of different angle in terms of how you look at it. So yeah, I'd love to know more about that, to be honest. That does sound, yeah, it sounds really interesting.
There's one more question I was going to ask you, which is, what's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the listeners with?
it's all about the now for me at the moment, my slight current obsession of actually right now, this very moment is the start of the rest of your life, right? So when we come off this off this recording and I go downstairs, you know, now is the rest of my life. And I find that really empowering of actually, yeah, forget the past. It doesn't matter what decisions you made or what happened. And don't worry about the future because you can only influence that to a certain extent. But, you know, what do you want to do now? What do you want to do now? What will make you happy now? And I think that is incredibly empowering. And the ability to just be in that present moment is really healthy. It sounds very simple, but it's not actually as simple just to live in the now. Because, yeah, like you say, your thoughts just enter your brain and sitting and emptying your mind of those thoughts, it's quite hard.
I love it. So, as you know, everyone who comes on the show and gets interviewed gets to give me a dare. Have you thought about one for me?
Yes, I do have a dare for you. Have you heard about forest bathing?
Forest what, sorry?
Bathing.
Bathing?
Forest
no.
Bathing. Okay, it's an ancient Japanese practice. It's something that came up probably about 2-3 years ago. Someone contacted me proactively and said, I'd love to invite you for a session of forest bathing. And I went along and I must admit, I was slightly cynical because I was like, well, I work out in the woodlands. I'm out in the trees and the countryside, you know, most of my time. So the idea of immersing yourself in nature, I must admit, I thought, well, you know, this is what I do. I'm a bit silly. And I went along and, some of it I did find a bit giggly, I must admit. But the shift was actually stop, immerse yourself and be in nature, but not be running around, not be working. You know, there's a big difference, isn't there? So anyway, my challenge to you is essentially based around this idea of forest bathing. And it's a fairly simple task to do, but I think it's something that has huge benefits. Well, I like to think it does have huge benefits. So we are currently in spring, although it doesn't have to be done at this time of year. It's a wonderful time of year because we're in the nesting season. So we've got dawn chorus. We've got the beauty of the birds all bursting into song about half an hour before dawn, which at the moment is about 5 o'clock, I think. And my challenge to you is to set an alarm, go to a woodland. Hopefully you've got one not too far from you, Mel. I'm not talking kind of national forest size. This can be a copse. It can be a small area of trees. It doesn't.
No, we got loads.
You got loads. Okay, that's great. All right. Yeah. So my challenge is to set the alarm, get out to a piece of woodland for dawn. You might want to take your breakfast with you or a thermos of tea, and immerse yourself in nature. Now, there isn't a time sort of set for this. A couple of hours is fantastic, but that depends on what else you've got on. But it is just an opportunity to re-engage with nature and immerse yourself. And you could walk for part of that time. But for part of the time, what I want you to do specifically is to sit and to just listen and spend some really proper time listening. And you're listening out for the big sounds, the planes in the sky, the weather, is the wind in the trees. You're listening for birds. And then you can start really drilling down, thinking, well, what different birds can I hear? And you realise suddenly there's sounds going around on so many levels. And then you can even take it down to the silly and get on your hands and knees or lie down on the ground and put your ear to the ground. And, you know, if it's been really dry, perhaps you can hear just the leaves rustling, or perhaps you can hear the insects, and you'll start to realise you can hear the woodlice and the bugs and everything on the ground.
Okay, that bit freaks me out. no, but that's all right, it's a dare.
Yeah, and then perhaps take a pen and paper with you. And this again, it's just a way of interpreting kind of this data and what your brain has just taken on board, and actually then work out, you know, what is that list? What have you heard, you know, in that time? What was man-made? What was nature? What was big? What was small? What was interesting, you know, and where did it come from? Was it above you, behind you? And just make a list, really, and see what you've discovered that you wouldn't have noticed if you'd just been walking through there with your headphones on?
Because I do that a lot, yeah. All right. No, that's great.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah, so thank you so much for being on the show, Ruth. I really appreciate your time, and we must not leave it this long before we speak again, because there's definitely some stuff I think we need to talk about.
I think there is, and it's been lovely chatting to you, and absolutely, when you're next in London, or perhaps I should make it over to visit you.
You should. There's so many forests, like so much nature.
Exactly.
Over here, yeah.
We can go and immerse ourselves in nature together.
We could. That would be awesome. All right. Take care. And I will speak to you soon.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye, Mel. Bye.
Good morning. So I am on my way to do my dare from Ruth. It's about 7 a.m. There's no one around. It's lovely. I can hear the birds singing already. And it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day.
It's really beautiful and peaceful, actually. I can't hear anything but nature. Oh, wow. I am pretty sure I just heard an owl. That was kind of cool. But I didn't capture it. I should have been recording the whole time, but I didn't want to be on my phone the whole time.
Oh God, I'm just looking around and I've got fucking ants everywhere and centipede or something. Yeah. Maybe I just sat in a nest, I don't know. Stay calm.
You know, I don't mind some bugs, but when they're crawling in your pants, that is definitely not what you want. I don't want ants in my pants at all. That's going to be very uncomfortable.
So I'm looking at the ground. It's really pretty because there's so many like dew droplets on the grass leaves, but there's also a ton of spiders, and as much as I want to put my ear to the ground and listen, like Ruth said, you can hear my dog sniffing around now. I'm a little bit terrified. I'm not sure I can do that. Maybe if I wrapped my head in bubble wrap.
God. There's more bugs crawling on me. I need to get away from that.
I'm back and I just jumped on my laptop because I wanted to see if it was potentially an owl that I saw. I don't know if they fly about during the day, but apparently they do, and Google tells me if you encounter an owl in the daytime, it tells us that you're on the path to enlightenment. So you'll hear some good news that will change your life. There you go. That has completely made my day. I mean, the forest bathing dare was a pretty good one, and one that I didn't think I would struggle with at all. When I got out there, then I was like, you know, oh my God, it's tick season. So I feel that I wasn't as daring as I could have been. Like, you know, I could have really laid down in the long grass for a while, but I think it's something that I will do again. And I know I keep saying that with every dare, but I guess this is the point, right? I'm daring to try a new thing, and then I'll start integrating that into my life because it's interesting. It's something that I've never thought about before. So yeah, thanks, Ruth. I really appreciate the dare, and I would definitely recommend to anyone who doesn't get out in nature often or does go out for a walk, actually, to sit down and take a moment and just listen to the sounds and just look really closely and focus on what's around you, because that to me was actually the coolest bit, you know? I mean, the dewdrops, all the sounds of the birds and the owl, and that's stuff that you don't normally hear because I wear earphones quite a lot. So yeah, I would definitely recommend it to anyone, and it's something easy and accessible that you can do without any equipment. So go for it. And let me know how you got on, of course.
If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.